I've written a couple of stories with other people, and I'd never considered writing a book with anybody else until Cass and I started talking. It just, because it's such a commitment. And you have to trust the other person and like their work and know that they can do it. And our styles are different enough that we could each bring something different to the story and to the actual telling of the story.
What is up, everybody? You're listening to episode 74 of SFF Addicts. I'm your host, Adrian M. Gibson, and welcome to your weekly dive into the world of science fiction, fantasy, and writing craft. Same as last week, my co-host, the Chewie to my Han Solo, the Joker to my Commander Shepard, MJ Kuhn, isn't joining us, but we miss you, MJ. And if anyone wants to support her work, you can go pick up Among Thieves, this beautiful little novel, fast-paced heists, and some morally gray characters. I know you're going to love it. You can also pick up the sequel, Thick as Thieves, if you want to support her and her writing. As well, a quick note for anyone out there listening or watching the official SFF Addicts Patreon and merch store are live, so check the links in the description to support what we do here. Also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast app, and subscribe to the FanFiAddict YouTube channel, where this and every other episode of the show is available in full video. And now, joining us once again is the darkest duo in the land, ha ha ha, co-authors of the brand new novel, The Dead Take the A-Train, Cassandra Kaw and Richard Kadrey. How are you two today?
Hello.
Thank you.
Oh, how are you?
Doing very well. That darkest duo was for you, Richard.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, man. All right, the heads up, this is part two of our two-part chat with Cass and Richard, so I recommend checking out part one to get to know them better. Today, though, we're doing a duet, delving into a masterclass on co-writing a novel. So to start off, Cass, we'll go with you first. When was the first time each of you realized books could actually be written by more than one person?
I think a long time ago, we've all read books that had co-writers. Good Omens, I think, being the template of it for so many people. So like, we always knew it was possible. It was just a question of how to make it happen, I guess.
Do you have a personal favorite co-authored book?
Good Omens, definitely Good Omens. I could like it, that book.
Love
Although it. I really like the Expanse series quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm on board for both.
I hadn't thought of that. That's right, I forgot about Expanse. I always forget that Expanse is done that way.
Mm-hmm.
Which says a lot to their talent.
Yeah, Daniel and Ty are amazing writers. Richard, what about you? When was the first time you realized that, or at least noticed, like, this book is written by two people?
I think as a kid reading science fiction pulp novels, I can't remember many of the names, but I remember one with Judith Merrill and maybe Kuttner writing a book together, and that seemed very exotic to me, if for no other reason than their names, Kuttner and Merrill. Sounded like a detective agency. And then you go up a bit, and I think both of the titles that Cass mentioned are just great ones. And I was kind of fascinated by the idea of how people wrote together. And of course, I grew up with film too, and you always see multiple people writing movies and television. So that was already in my head, that like, this is possible.
Yeah, and especially with movies and television, it's like, not just two authors, sometimes they're three, four screenwriters working on a script together, and
well, I'll tell you, they're not working on it together. I'll tell you that. That's not how that works. If you see five names on a script, first off, it's a mess, and secondly,
probably two of those are like people who came into like what do they call script doctors? Is that the term?
Script doctors don't usually get credit, because I've done some script doctoring. Okay. No, if there's five names on there, that's a bunch of people who are fighting it out with the Writers Guild. And just, I want my name on there because it gives you certain prestige and money. Yeah. And there's other guild stuff. But those five people did not write that together. They probably hate each other because you changed my script and I changed your script. And anyway, it's a very funny process because I've been part of that a couple of times, and no one likes when you're the new guy who comes in and changes everything.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of a movie like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, how that just went through so many, it was just a mess of a movie to begin with.
Yes.
But, or not to begin with, to end with, as something to watch, but then like going through the credits and everything, it's like, oh, okay. That makes sense. But for you two in particular, your book is fantastic and it's not a mess.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
How did your co-authoring relationship begin? You know, like who approached who, and what made you both want to write a novel together?
I wanted to try co-writing first, and I think Richard had been curious about it before. And also this was sort of like almost trading grounds, because he'd heard me wail incessantly about being afraid of writing novels. I'm like, I can do novellas. I can't do novels. And Richard was like, you can absolutely do novels. And in many ways, this was him helping to steer me through that fear of writing novels, especially outlines. I remember the first time he tried to drag me off for an outline meeting, I basically wailed about it forever because I was not used to the idea of outlines. And I'm writing 10,000 word outlines. But it was just kind of how it started. We kept talking about it and kept getting excited about the idea. And eventually came up with a terrible system in the beginning that we had to revise to figure out our individual quirks.
Well, why was
that? Yeah, it seems so simple. It seems so simple in the beginning, and then we just a complete train wreck.
Oh, God, yes. So our initial idea was dividing up the chapters depending on what each person found interesting, and it was fine for me because I work in the games industry, and half the time when I'm writing in a black box. I don't know what's happening anywhere else, and there are pauses that are done to make everything make sense. But then we discovered Richard actually needed the context of previous chapters, and it was so behind on mine that he ended up flailing through his. And then I had immigration stuff that I needed to deal with. Then you also had hip surgery. So that became incredibly chaotic for both of us. Eventually, we settled on the realization what made more sense was one person doing a pass and then the other one following up and doing your own pass over it. And that worked out really well because that meant each person could have their distinctive voice there. But then as the other person did the other pass, adding things or removing things, you, I guess, instinctively edit based on your existing voice. So he would trim down on my prose, which tends to be very baroque. And I would run into fight scenes or gory, scary scenes and just slather it with even more buckets of entrails because that is my happy place.
Oh, man. Okay, so Cass, you touched on a bunch of points that I want to dig into a little bit deeper. But before we get into that, I kind of want to pick your brains about why the Dead Take the A Train was the idea that stuck. You know, if either of you had previous ideas for books that you wanted to write with someone else or with each other, or just like an idea that comes to you and you think, ah, this would be a really good co-author kind of project. But why was it that The Dead Take the A-Train was the book that made sense for you two as co-writers?
I think it's because we love New York and we both have urban fantasy backgrounds, Richard more so than I.
I think so. And I think, I mean, really, I've written a couple of stories with other people, and I'd never considered writing a book with anybody else until Cass and I started talking. It just, because it's such a commitment. And you have to trust the other person and like their work and know that they can do it. And our styles. Yes. And our styles are different enough that we could each bring something different to the story and to the actual telling of the story.
Yeah, because that's something that I've been thinking about a lot. It's like going into the debut experience and already knowing I would love to write a book with someone else one day. You know, I've already spoken to a couple of friends, MJ being one of them, about like, it would be really fun to write a book with you. But I don't know if it's advisable for a debut author to tackle that so early on in their writing journey, you know? So I wanted to get your opinions in terms of, when do you recommend an author would take on something like co-writing? You know, if it's advisable for an author to kind of find themselves first and write solo works and establish their voice as opposed to jumping right into it. Or do you think it's more a matter of like, right co-author, right time, like right person, right project?
I think you need to be confident about your voice before you enter anything like that. If you are sure of who you are and you are sure if you're writing now, I don't think that, like, I don't think it's a bad idea to start co-writing immediately. But if you're still in a phase where you're a little bit hesitant, you're trying to figure out who and what you want to be, and you might find yourself intimidated or upset or frustrated at somebody writing over your prose or pushing things here and there, then it's worth waiting. But really, it depends on you.
I think it's the other part, what Cass just said, is also letting go of ego, the idea of somebody rewriting your work. We know each other, we like each other, we trust each other. So the ego part of it never came up. But, you know, if you're not sure of the other person, I can see, if you're not sure of the other person, if you're unsure of yourself, I can see ego becoming, you know, could be a problem along the way.
Yeah, because ego can even be a problem just for an individual author working on their own project, because it's like,
sure,
this struggle with your own ego to say, like, you know, is it worth writing this? Kind of imposter syndrome type thoughts sinking in. Is it worth writing this? Is it going to find an audience? Why the fuck are my ideas worth it? Or, you know, coming up against barriers in terms of not feeling confident about your work and all these different kinds of things. But Richard, you brought up a point where it's like the ego thing, but also finding someone that you can kind of connect with, in the sense that, you know, based on your relationship with the person, that this has a high possibility of working out and us being able to have a good collaborative experience together. How might authors out there go about finding the right person to co-author with? I know this is a really like situational kind of thing, but obviously there are signs that it might not work. You know, like the ego thing, or have either of you tried doing this before and maybe it didn't work out the way that you thought it would?
Go ahead.
Sorry, you first.
I co-wrote a couple of stories and that turned out all right. And I think both because Cass is a game writer and is used to working in a room where ideas are being talked about and you're servicing the bigger project. And I've done a little game work and I've done film and TV stuff. And it's the same thing where you're all servicing the story. And if someone's ego gets out of line, that person, you know, that person sometimes doesn't end up in the project. But, you know, having the experience of and the understanding of servicing the greater good makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, I agree with Richard. I think it really does go back to the ego thing, and you can see it from the way they interact with other people, the way they interact with other people's books, whether they support the community, whether they're kind about it. Somebody who's very rigid, very focused on themselves and no one else, that's usually a sign they might not be the best person to collaborate with.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I mean, for me, I used to be in bands. And one of the things you learn from being in bands is, if you have a great guitarist, but he's an asshole, he's going to ruin the band.
Yeah.
Because that one asshole can drag the whole thing down. So if you're going to collaborate, it's got to be with people you click with.
Yeah. And it's like, I think at that
point, a real,
at that point, you might already be developing friendships with people in the community. And if you can form mm-hmm. good friendships, then those are probably the people that you're already clicking with. And therefore you can kind of suss out, like, what's your workflow like? Like, what's your approach to writing? Mm-hmm. How might we be able to kind of meld our two approaches together in a way that is mm-hmm. that is productive, you know? Because it's like that asshole guitarist, eventually people are going, I don't want to be in your fucking band. Like, I don't want to be in the band with you. I don't want to be your friend or whatever.
It's right.
Like, shitty people yeah. sinking ships. Like, I don't want to be on that ship with you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Cass, earlier you brought up the thing about voice in terms of you and Richard merging your voices together in terms of like your writing style being more baroque and his being a bit more lean and all that kind of stuff. But I think finding a voice as an author is something that I've thought a lot about. But do you want to elaborate a bit on this notion of finding a voice and style as co-authors and as like a unified team?
I feel like all of my answers are going to be essentially the same at this point. Finding that composite voice, I think, was a lot about trust. It was knowing that when Richard removed things or reworded things, it wasn't because he thought of my work as poor or as something he didn't enjoy. I knew he loved my work. I knew he trusted what I was doing, and everything was to make the book better. And getting that composite voice, I think, meant leaning completely into that sense of trust. The way I think, one of the earlier chapters, I remember you left a lot of like gruesome scenes that were entirely unfleshed out, and I just ran over with them and just lengthened all the fights and brutality in it in a very happy way.
Yeah,
and I asked you about it, and you were like, yeah, I was writing the chapter, and I was sure that Cass would just add an appropriate amount of gore afterwards.
Yep. Sometimes if you know the other person's going to do something better than you in a way you want in a collaboration,
yep.
you can just leave that little thing of like, Bob kills Jeff with an axe. You know, you just take it from there.
That is generally kind of what happens.
I love that. Yeah. What were some other things, like other strengths that you knew the other person had that you were like, I'm just going to leave this, you know, just a little note, be like,
yeah.
flesh this out, like add some stuff to it. I know you're better at this than me. What are some other things that you know about the other person that you think it's like, I know you do this better than I do?
I have Richard, feel free to, I think, ask Adrian to cut this section if you're not comfortable with it, because the story is going to be funny. Drugs. I have no experience with drugs outside of marijuana, and that's only something I got into like when I was 35, 36. Because I grew up in Malaysia where there was capital punishment for even the smallest amount of drugs. If you're caught with a certain amount of weed, you're just going to get dragged up and hung. That's it. And so growing up in that environment, it was kind of beaten into me. If you are in the same room as somebody having drugs, there is a not zero chance you are going to die. So with Julie being so into coke and all kind of designer drugs, I kind of looked at Richard and we're like, how does any of this work?
Yeah. It's like, Richard, get on in here.
Yeah. I have to admit, people take drugs and people smoke in my books because I don't do either one anymore. Yeah. So,
but you did.
But
that's
I
it, that's, his, the, that's his vice now. His vice is representing it on the page.
Yeah. Well, other things too. But I don't do cocaine anymore and I don't smoke anymore, but I love both of them so much. I don't drink vodka all the time, but vodka pairs very well with cocaine. So that became Julie's central focus in her bad habits.
I think I just did a little post earlier in the week about the book on social media, and I wrote a cocaine and vodka fueled thrill ride through New York, and I feel like that kind of amped up nature really fit with Julie as a character, but also just like I love hearing this kind of behind the scenes stuff as well.
So. Well, we're talking about New York in the other interview, and I mean, cocaine, vodka, and New York just seem to me go so well together, because you get that weird cocaine liquor buzz going, and then you're in New York. So that means you can go out and get Korean food at 4 a.m. because you can't sleep. But there'll be one of those hot tray places around the corner. And so you can finish off your night just filling up those little styrofoam bowls with food. And that's just, it's kind of a perfect New York evening.
And just like walking around the city.
Not anymore. Not anymore, though. If there are any cops watching, not anymore.
There are no autoclaves in my office, and Richard doesn't have any
right. drugs in his. And I do not have any cocaine in my apartment.
Yeah. No, that's great, though, because I appreciate that you both, you know, and this kind of ties into the friendship thing and the relationship that you build with this other person that you're co-writing with is understanding nuances and strengths about their writing and appreciating the work that they've put out in the past and knowing applying to this project in particular, Cass could do this thing really well. Of course, you're going to bring on the body horror and just like throw down those gnarly action scenes and viscera and guts and all that beautiful stuff and just like the rawness that Richard brings. I think it's really special to see authors that are able to do this. And I think for anyone out there who wants to co-author, I think it is really important to trust the person that you're writing with and to get to know them. It's like the more and more you become friends with somebody, the more you pick up on the nuances of their life and their history and all these different kinds of things that can really add amazing elements to a story, I think. And that's why The Dead Take the A-Train for me feels very strong, is because there's so much about both of you in this book, you know, from like the way that Julie runs across like an old man in the park and she's trying to tell him like, get the fuck out of here. And I could just kind of picture in my head, like, this feels like something that Cass has experienced. You know what I mean? And just all these different moments where you manage this cohesion, but you also manage to give it your individual personalities. And that's probably a very difficult balance for people to find. And that's something like why Good Omens is such an amazing book, why The Expanse is such an amazing series, is because authors who are able to infuse themselves but also make it feel cohesive so that the reader isn't pulled out of the experience, I think is a very tricky balance. But if you can pull it off, it's magic.
Yeah, well, I mean, liking each other's work, but liking each other as people, I think those are two. I think those are the two bases you have to work
for. Very important bases. Because
You're going to be in this for a while, and there's going to be there's going to be big chunks of time where there'll be a certain amount of time where you're going, I'm lost. You're going to have to help me here. I don't know where I am anymore.
But that's the ego thing too, to be able to admit, well, shit, I'm lost. That is to be able to supersede your own ego and admit that to another person is like, we're in this together and I have to tell you, I don't know what the fuck is going on, and being able to work together to then resolve that situation is really important. And Cass, you were mentioning a little bit about the writing process and how that evolved earlier, but I want to dig deeper into the way that you two drafted this book. And if you could, you know, I want to get Richard's take on this as well. The sort of stage that you got to where you were doing, writing a chapter and doing a pass on the previous chapter and then writing a new chapter and that back and forth, and how that kind of unfolded in such a way where you two felt like our writing and our styles and our voices are merging in a way that's functioning for this.
Did we ever feel that?
We tried doing the, I'll write one chapter, then you rewrite it, and then you'll give it back to me. And like, basically, we'd ended up with like two chapters with 10 drafts. And it's like, oh, we have to keep going.
So many drafts.
And that's when we realized we need to write longer chunks and then give the longer piece to each other. It really took a while to figure that out.
Yeah.
But when we figured out like, no. One person has to haul this boulder up the hill. And then the other person, when it gets there,
pulls it up the other hill.
The next hill. Yeah.
So it's like this like game of baton, but like,
yes, Sisyphus. Very much so.
Sisyphus baton.
There you go.
Result in later on when we're getting our final page passes, every time our editor sent the book back, we would scream very softly at each other over text. Oh God, it's the book. I can't make it go away. Yes.
Oh man. What about deadlines? Did you two at any point think like,
we didn't make it. Just stop your question. Just stop your question.
We did not make any of her deadlines. I'm sorry. I had an international move. Oh, and he had hip surgery. We made none of her deadlines.
Yeah.
None of them. We're just very lucky our editors trusted in us.
Yeah. That we would actually finish it someday.
Yes.
Yeah. You made it work. How was it working with Tor Nightfire and, you know, going through all of the madness of this experience and then entering into like revision stage, editing stage, and then editing with Tor Nightfire and, you know, moments where either the two of you were discussing, like, does something need to be cut or you wanted to fight to keep it? Or if Tor was saying like, can we cut this or can we trim this down or anything like that?
I think Richard was more attached to certain parts of the book than I was. Like, working the games industry, I'm just so used to dragging my darlings out to the back of the shed and just shooting them in the head.
Yeah.
I feel like
your version of kill your darlings would be a bit more brutal than just shooting them in the head.
Excuse me, I appreciate economy.
Just one bullet, get it done.
Just one bullet, yes. You gotta be efficient with these things, man.
Yeah. There were parts that they took stuff out that made me unhappy. But then there was stuff, I think each of us had moments where it's like, nope, you can't take that out. And here's why. Or you can't take it out or you can't reframe it. There was a long story Julie tells Sarah that her editors wanted to take and us to make into an adventure. But the whole purpose of her telling Sarah a story was that intimate act of storytelling, that getting reacquainted with someone. Here's my life. We didn't need to tell that as a separate adventure. Sarah and Julie had to bond at that moment of storytelling, because that's, like I said, their story is an intimate one, and that activity is an intimate one. And I think that was, so we fought for that. We fought for that.
Yeah, because it's like it's removing the potency of this relationship building for the sake of here's like a, I don't know, like
an action scene,
a side novella, or like a little like short story on the side, or just some sort of thing that would take away from the true power that act has, you know, in its meta form of like the power of story within a story itself. Building that relationship through that. Yeah. And so
they cut our entire our first chapter.
You were so indignant about that. I remember.
I loved that first chapter so much. I loved that first chapter, but they were right. Jumping my first chapter idea was very artsy and, I'm not going to go into it. It hurts. Still hurts. But the idea of starting Julie's story where Cass started it, just blasting into the bachelorette party, was the perfect thing to do.
Literally just, I would say, just exploding into the erupting into the bachelorette party.
Erupting is a good word for that whole scene.
It's a good tonal kind of like mood setter. It's like, this is what you can expect, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of erupting throughout the book.
Lots of erupting. But for the two of you, okay, so you did the majority of this book virtually. Mm-hmm. How did you go about that in terms of, were you doing calls with each other? How much of it was, you know, sending an email or a text message or that kind of stuff? What would you recommend?
We're chronically online.
Yeah. What would you recommend for people, like, if you were going to co-write virtually, some tips and tricks for approaching it?
Have a messenger system that you really like. We use Telegram for that, and that was useful. Find something that's pleasant to read, pleasant on your eyes, that supports a lot of text, because you will inevitably want to send chunks of story to one another. Sometimes just to show off the cool new thing that you've done, or to ask the other person's opinion of a thing. So have a messaging system that you like. Really, that's the main thing. We did it almost entirely via text, except for the outline planning.
Yeah, there were a couple of Zoom things, but it was mostly just because it's a book. We don't you want to live in words, so we just hurled words back and forth, like Cass said.
I like that. Yeah, because I mean, email would get too clunky, it would get too overwhelming. And obviously, there are times where having a video call really helps, just to hash things out, but. I like what you said, Richard. In terms of a call, can speed things up sometimes.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I really like what you said in terms of living in the words, like that. You're writing a book. It feels like the right format to collaborate in that way. Yeah. But what were you going to say?
No, I'm saying sometimes a call can speed things up. You can have five emails or five discussions back and forth, but sometimes a quick call could cut through stuff. But again, we were pretty good with each other in any case, so that having to do calls was very seldom. It was, in some ways, it was more fun to do it through something like Telegram, because you'd be sitting there working on your own bit, and then suddenly this huge chunk of story would just appear. And it was just like this little magic trick that meant you could quit work for a couple of minutes and go read somebody else's bit.
Yeah. But that's inspiring at the same time, you know, to go and read their stuff and just be like, fuck yes. Obviously you have some critiques and whatever in there, but something that I like to do, my friend Ronnie Verdi actually does this too, is like while you're writing, to just dip into a book for 5-10 minutes, something like that, and then come back to your writing and kind of use one to sort of fuel and facilitate the other.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, I might have to jump early. I think one of the cats is having a stomachache, and if I don't tend to it, I'm going to spend the rest of the night cleaning, to be very delicate about it.
No worries, Cass. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah.
I trust Richard not to say anything very strange for the rest of the masterclass. I apologize.
Take care.
It's going
to
be kind.
See you later. I'll talk to you later, Cass.
Thank you so much for having me again, Andrew.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, it was really good to meet you. Okay. Richard, so let's dig a little bit deeper into some co-writing craft stuff. In terms of approaching story aspects like characters and world building, dialogue, action, that kind of thing. Obviously trying to make sure that they're both collaborative and consistent from like an ideation standpoint. And then like Cass was mentioning earlier, she'd jump in there and kind of flesh out the action bits. So do you want to dig into that a bit?
Yeah, well, one of the things was, as Cass said earlier, they didn't have quite as much experience with outlining and story structure as I did on a big project. They had done tons of novellas and stories, but on a huge project like a book, they didn't have quite as much experience. So at the beginning, I kind of took some of that on. And then as things developed, the story structure started coming from both of us, because it was just, it's that thing of building on ideas. It's like, yeah, well, here's an idea. Oh, I have an idea. Oh, that's great, because I had this other idea, and we can just, you keep piling things on top of each other.
Yeah, and I like that.
Some of those scenes just became, some of the bits of the book simply became, it's interesting looking back on some of them. Like, there's a character of the doorman in a hotel. And I remember I came up with the doorman. And then there's a scene with Julie and Brad in the hotel. And we both worked on that. And I have no idea who kind of did what with that scene anymore, because we both went over it a lot. So that's kind of a nice feeling of like, I know I came up with one part of it. The rest of it is just us.
But that's the beauty of it, is like the,
yeah,
getting to a point of unconscious collaboration. And I know what scene you're talking. I know this character, and it's a fantastic scene, and someone who is such a small piece of the overall puzzle, the overall novel, but the two of you managed to create, in very few words, a character that feels very real.
Nice. Thank you.
And is obviously super humorous too. And that's something else I wanted to touch on, was the humor that is sprinkled throughout this book. Cause obviously there's a lot of horror. There's a lot of, really, you know, visceral scenes. There are a lot of really emotional moments. There are a lot of amazing, you know, parts of like relationship building and all this different kind of stuff. How did you two find that emotional balance in terms of, this feels like a natural moment for humor and release, or this feels like a good time for emotional scene, and we're not going to throw a bunch of eldritch horror or like body horror into there? So how did you two find that balance, at least from your perspective?
Some of it simply comes from experience. A lot of it simply comes from experience and trusting ourselves and each other, because I'm a big believer in humor in dark fantasy and horror, although it doesn't always appear in my horror, but in a book like this, it needed, with the cast of characters and the setting we had, it needed moments of levity, because that's who Julie was also. That's her character, is someone who's not on the surface going to take things seriously, but underneath takes everything very seriously. So it was kind of a balance of that. And, you know, that's a trick I don't think I can tell anybody, because it just comes from the experience of, oh, this beat here, there's this little moment right here where we need to break things. And that means a moment of horror or a moment of humor. And you go along a little further, and then the rhythm becomes, well, this is an intimate talking scene with no horror, no nothing else, just two people having an emotional moment together, and just that balance of loud and quiet. And a lot of that just comes from having done so much of this stuff before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love how you paired humor and horror as the way to break that kind of moment, where it's like, who is it that I was speaking to about this? Kevin Hearn was speaking about the relationship between humor and horror, and how they play on similar psychological traits within human beings, but the delivery is different. The ultimate delivery is different. So I like how you kind of paired those things together, because humor and horror do play really well together.
And they do. And Kevin's good at it.
Shining example.
Kevin's good at that stuff.
Oh, Kevin is amazing at it. Yeah. Were there any other moments during the writing of this book that really surprised you? I was like, holy shit. Like, I didn't expect this character to appear or for this relationship to play out in however way, or for something to happen that just really made you shocked and like, oh shit, this is amazing, or this is really, you know.
I'm trying to think. Well, one fun thing was I think I came up with Dan, Julie's ex-boyfriend, and I knew he was going to be a bad guy. And then that almost became a game of, I wrote some Dan, and then Cass wrote some Dan and made him worse. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm going to take Dan back and I'm going to make him worse. And then we kind of, that just became a kind of game with Dan, who was a horrible person to begin with. Figuring out between the two was like, well, how far can Dan go? And there was a little going back and forth on that, but I think we got a nice balance of like how awful Dan could be. That was sort of that was the name of the game. How awful can Dan be?
Oh, competing.
I'm sorry, another. Tyler. Dan's bad, but Tyler's the one that we kind of played with more.
Yeah, Dan is he's. The husband.
Sarah's ex.
Sarah's husband. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, Tyler's the person where it's like, because you get POV chapters inside his head, so you can kind of see him internalizing the moments where his boundaries are being pushed.
Yeah.
And so that is even more satisfying to be like, how far are you going to go, man? And then he goes in a direction that you didn't expect. And you're like, oh, shit, I want bad things to happen to you because you're horrible.
Some of Tyler from me was exorcising my memory of working in corporate settings.
Yeah. After the two of you mentioned that, I was like, this feels like just therapy for
there's a bit. Corporate. There's always therapy. A bit of that in a big project.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So closing out, I want to do a little bit of pros and cons. After everything we've discussed, what are some of the biggest benefits of co-writing with another author, and what have, from your perspective, been some of the biggest challenges or downsides?
The biggest advantage for me was having one idea. The story is going to go like this. The character is going to go like this. And then have someone else come in and go, but what if we did this to them? What if we twisted them and made this whole thing different? And then so that piling on of ideas, of getting, of finding words or ideas or characters that you wouldn't have come to, but somebody else brings in, and then you get to play with them together. That's great. I loved that. The challenges were literally writing it. That took us a while to figure out through, you know, like we said earlier, we started out doing small units and handing them off, but that was just a disaster. Realizing later on that we had to do very big chunks and then let that go back and forth. And some of that stuff was just really at the end of the project, like each of us was literally rewriting the book. We'd go to the editors and they'd ask questions, and one of us would take it back and go a whole pass, give it back, get more questions. Then the other person made a whole pass through. So, yeah, it's a little brutal, but you know, I do think it made everything come together in a decent way.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed the book, so I can definitely attest to that. And I've heard other authors who obviously this approach is very much a matter of the authors that are involved, because I've heard from friends who have co-written, and it would be kind of like one person, maybe it's like a multi POV book where one person writes one POV and the other person writes another. And they just go back and forth in terms of the POVs, or Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. It's like they would write a lot of the chapters together, and just kind of brainstorm and play video games and let the ideas flow. And they would do like back and forth kind of thing in that way as well. But I think for any authors out there who want to co-write a novel, if you could give a final piece of advice to them, what would it be?
Find someone you trust and then figure out your process afterwards. But you have to have that human relationship to begin with. That's the most important part. If you're going to think about writing a book with somebody, you already like their writing. And writing a book is a long, complicated process. So you better be prepared to be with them for a long time in a complicated, sometimes really pressurized setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like that. Because it digs into the realities of it. It's like, you got to love writing. You got to appreciate the person and trust them. Trust them in such a way where you can put your ego aside and trust yourself enough to have the confidence to work with that person and collaborate with them. And it's a difficult thing. Like I can just tell from the way that you and Cass described it, how difficult it is, but I think it's a fascinating way to experience writing a book. And something that I personally am very much looking forward to one day. And doing this masterclass was a big part of it was me and MJ as well, wanting to learn as much as we could about how you two approach this book. And there's a lot in here that people can take away from it. So I really appreciate you, you and Cass imparting all of your wisdom and madness and everything. And, Sharing more about the experience of writing The Dead Take the A-Train.
Thanks a lot. I hope some of this was helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And that's it for this mini masterclass and our two-parter with Cassandra Kaw and Richard Kadri. Cassandra had to dip out early because of cats, but thank you to her as well for joining us. And thank you, Richard, for sharing your co-writing experience and just taking time out of your evening to hang out with me. So I really appreciate it. And
it's a really nice time. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. And if you could let folks know where they can find you online.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Blue Sky and I'm on Instagram. Just pretty much Google my name and it'll pull all that stuff up.
Perfect. So, and
I'm pretty easy to find.
Awesome. And Cassandra, I think she mentioned Instagram and TikTok are the main ones for her, correct?
TikTok and Instagram, yes. Perfect. At Cass Kaw on Instagram. And I forget what they are on TikTok.
Hopefully it's the same. I will put links in the description below. So don't worry about that anymore. Right. You can also follow SFF Addicts on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads at SFF Addicts Pod. Or you can follow me at Adrian M. Gibson. MJ is at MJ Kuhn Books, all over the place. Blue Sky, Twitter, everywhere. You can also pick up Among Thieves and Thick as Thieves to go support her work. Now, keep reading, keep imagining, and we'll see you next time on SFF Addicts.